Now that the war is over, finally, and the men come home again, will their customary violence be forgotten? Or will it spread like a stain? The war is over. Troy lies shattered in the sun. Agamemnon and Menelaus have done at last what they swore 10 long years ago to do. Earth and blood are all that remain of Priam's imperishable dream. Let those who think they have nothing to learn from the past consider Troy and remember that this is what always happens. Men who love to build, to order, to create, also love to fight, to match strain against strain, stress against stress, to let the hungering for blood fill up their soul's emptiness.
You are pale, Orestes, and have been weeping. Why? Today should be a day of rejoicing for you and for your mother, Clytemnestra, and for the citizens of Argos. Troy has finally fallen. Your royal father, Agamemnon, comes home at last. 10 years of hardship, 10 years of fear are at an end.
You mistake me, Aegisthus. I rejoice that my father comes home, but I weep because my mother forbids me to be at his side when he enters the holy citadel of Argos.
Do not doubt your mother, Orestes. For everything she does, she has a reason. Since Agamemnon left her side and went to Troy, your mother has suffered in ways a boy of your age cannot understand. I am your mother's steward, her closest advisor. I see the anguish, the weariness, the persistent labor of her mind, which she keeps hidden from you and from your sister, Electra. Remember, too, that in her heart she still grieves for her daughter, your firstborn sister, Iphigenia, whose life Agamemnon was obliged to offer as a sacrifice to the gods. Now, perhaps today, at last, she wishes to make her peace with your worthy and illustrious father.
Do not use smooth words to me, Aegisthus. You are my mother's lover, although you try to deny it. Why do you betray my father with his wife? Why do you pretend to be my counselor and friend? You have no friendship and no love for me.
I have always loved you, Orestes. I am sorry that you find it necessary to question in me motives which I protest are open, affectionate, and honest. Argos is your home. You do yourself wrong to fill it up with imaginary enemies. Do you suppose that all men, other than your royal father, are deceitful and self-interested? Do you think that your mother plots against you too? Are these truly your thoughts, Orestes?
A man should take his thoughts private to the grave, Aegisthus. He is what he does, and only that.
Now, you are too young, Orestes, to know what a man is or does. Honor your father. Be glad that he has come home. But obey your mother, who has always loved you.
Electra.
Yes, mother.
Approach me, child. Today at noon, your royal father returns from Troy. But I am sending you and your brother away. Servants will conduct you to the kingdom of Phocis, where you will reside as guests of the king until it pleases me to summon you home.
Mother, my brother and I are Agamemnon's flesh. To be banished from his sight on this day of all days is to be starved of the light of the life-giving sun, denied the right to breathe the eternal air.
Do not criticize me, Electra, until you have heard my reasons. Long ago, before your father was vouchsafed his triumph in this war, he did to me and all our house a great and grievous wrong. Until we two are reconciled and have spoken together mutual words of forgiveness and trust, these celebrations must sound a hollow note.
Mother, I know well enough that my father did wrong to spill his daughter's blood. Yet I make bold to say that he did it because the gods granted him no choice. And in the thing he did it for, they have rewarded him with success almost beyond hope.
You never knew your father. It is only his name which infatuates you. At Troy, below the walls, no human being moved except at Agamemnon's word. Power such as this is to be feared more than loved. I place your brother Orestes in your care. Be mother to him as well as sister. In time, you will come to see why I dispose these matters as I do. Now, obey me, child, and go.
Mother, my duty to you as a daughter compels my obedience, but I am like my father. I say without fear what has to be said.
The king's ship has docked, Clytemnestra. Agamemnon has already disembarked. He is waiting for the elders of the city of Argos to receive him.
Have you spoken to the king or seen him yet?
I have not seen him, but I have heard that the crossing from Troy was a rough one. Storms caught the fleet within a day and a night of their departure. The king's flagship has lost a mast and several of its crew, but the king himself is safe and well.
Is everything prepared?
Everything is ready.
I long to strike the blow, and yet I fear to do it.
Love, do not be afraid.
He is my husband. He is the father of my children.
If you had been mine, Clytemnestra, do you think I would have left your side to go to Troy? Do you think I would have shed the blood of the children we made together? Nature is merciless. Against this unreason, the gods have set only a small measure of personal affection. The ties of blood and family which they mean us to honor, not to destroy. But your husband, Agamemnon, desired from life more than wealth, more than the scope of a monarchy could give. He strove to rule as a god upon the earth. And in the fulfillment of his will, no scruple has dismayed him, and no moral law prevented him. His father Atreus was the same. My family remembers Argos before Atreus took it for his own. We are the old, true stock. Older and truer than the king's line. Yet Atreus imprisoned and executed my father for crimes it was later proved that he did not commit. Oh, Clytemnestra, justice will never exist on earth if we do not dare to take into our own hands the powers of life and death and use them boldly, as the immortal gods are said to do.
Take word to my husband, the king, that Clytemnestra, his wife, makes ready the house for her lord's return. Say that she awaits his coming with a heart brimful of expectation and longing.
I know you have sworn to receive him alone and strike the blow alone. But when he enters this room, I will be within hearing.
Power, or the lack of power. There is nothing else. In the city of Argos, it is said of me that my body is female, but my mind masculine, hard as a pebble, sharp as a kitchen knife. We knew a month ago that Agamemnon was coming home. A shrill old man, his face dark as a berry, burst into the hall where we were eating. Oh, mistress, Troy has fallen. I've sighted fire in the sky. The news he brought was true. It came on wings of flame, leaping like a voice. First from the victory beacon they kindled on the wooded slopes of Ida overlooking Troy, then on to Lemnos, then to Tenedos, then across the astonished world to Argos. I have not forgotten how Agamemnon was 10 long years ago when his ship set sail, how the prospect of glory gnawed at his entrails like a fever. He swore to batter the gates of Troy like a metal glove hammered out of solid gold over a fist carved in granite. And, as if intoxicated by the scent of blood, the island tribes flowed after him, avid with longing for what he promised them. Treasure, empire, and women. At Aulis, the gods checked him. The wind would not blow. The fleet lay month upon month at anchor, dangerously becalmed.
There, as every passing day brought rumour of mutiny to his tent, anxiety clawed at his faith. He summoned the priests, ordered the sacrifices taken, demanding to know why the gods had stymied his ambition. "Why will you not give me a fair wind to Troy?" he cried. The gods, laughing at his pride, took counsel of themselves, saying to each other, "Now let us discover how much he wants it." Out of heaven, Hermes the wayfarer, spirit of mischief, appeared in a dream to Calchas, the high priest. Interpreted, the dream spoke, as superstition does, in images of cold horror, asking of Agamemnon what he dreaded most to give, the life of his own firstborn daughter. When he heard it, he wept in secret, but in public put on a grave and stoical face. Let Agamemnon give up what he loves best for the sake of his country and his gods, he declared, for no one shall say that I am an impious man. And no one did. And so his order was obeyed. I brought Iphigenia to Aulis, unaware of what was intended. When Agamemnon, his stomach fluttering with fear, told me that the gods required her blood, I lay down and howled. But the girl, informed that her death was heaven's will, proclaimed it glorious to die in a noble cause. Life to her, at 13 years of age, was sunlit, vivid, simple. "To be born princess of Argos," she cried, her voice ringing like gold on marble, "is to be daughter to a nation. One life must not hinder this great enterprise which the Greek Confederation undertakes. Often in war, the youngest and the best are called to suffer first." Accordingly, she uttered no word of protest as the priests in their sacerdotal robes bound her and carried her, horizontal as a carpet, to the altar. The silence and the slowness of it seemed obscene as she was stripped for ritual death. Her eyes were huge with courage, but her breasts, bared to meet the knife, were small, with blue-white veins. I wept. The end came in an instant. The priest's arm arched downward. The blade flashed in the light. I made no sound nor cry, but looked into my husband's eyes and thought, "You too will be naked when you die." I have tried to be happy. Tried to find contentment raising my children, loving them and caring for them. I made the best, as a woman must, of what was imposed upon me by the contract of marriage. What was he? Nothing. A hollow drum of a man. The son of a father noted only for his obdurate aggression. What he craved in me was the nobility I was born to. He knew that what others said of him was true, that my ancestors ruled as kings and queens in Sparta when his lived in caves. I brought into his palace a gentleness, a loveliness it had never known before. I furnished it with the laughter of children, with dancing and with minstrelsy. Yet how did he reward me? He murdered the child of my body. He polluted my life with cruelty and blood. When you live beside a brutal man, you are frightened all the time. The fear never leaves you completely, even when you know that you are in favor. Even when you feel yourself to be loved, you cannot forget how, in a moment, his mood can alter, how he can decide suddenly, without reason or motive, that someone must die, someone must be killed. To frighten the strong, to put fear into the hearts of those who have power, it is necessary to shed their blood. Killing is the only end which the strong truly fear. In a world where the powerful kill with impunity, where killing is the currency of power, you must do as they do, or suffer in silence. I want Agamemnon to know at the moment when his own life is taken from him by force, that I too have the strength to strike, that the power he thought was his is also mine. Look, he's coming. In 10 years, he has changed his mind. Fear, he bows his head to the gods. How he puts off his sandals. But there is no drop of piety anywhere. He returns, giddy with triumph, stinking with blood, planning to lord it in Argos until the end of his days. Oh, you gods! Revenge means that the weak, innocent, do not suffer for nothing. The wheel goes on turning. The dead rise up against the living. Those who commit crimes pay for them at the end, however powerful they think they are.
I kneel first and kiss the blessed earth which gave me life. I am preeminent Agamemnon, undefeated lord of battles, master over Troy, a king among kings. Yet what I speak today is only gratitude and humility that I return alive and in health. Successful. This is a time for celebration. But let us remember in our rejoicing that luck does not hold forever. Only the man who dies securely in his bed at the end of his natural span can be said to be fortunate. For the rest, life is nothing more than vain hope.
Welcome, Agamemnon. Welcome home to Argos. For 10 long years, I have lacked your authority and strength.
Wait. Why do you mock me, Clytemnestra? I see no table prepared for me. No guests assembled to sit beside me. Where is my son, Orestes? Where is my daughter, Electra? Why are they not here as they should be to break bread with their father in honor of his homecoming?
Is it not fitting, Agamemnon, for a woman to desire seclusion alone with her husband on the evening he returns from the war? We have not spoken together. There has been no intimacy between us for 10 long years. You cannot imagine how slowly the drawn-out days have passed since you set sail for Troy. How wretched and how lifeless they have been to me, praying only for your safe return. For 10 years,
I have been subject to every breeze which blew, every rumor of success or failure. Yet now, you come home to me like spring after winter's long hunger, or like the reviving sun to the barren ground.
Clytemnestra, I thank you for your gentleness and courtesy, as well as for the faith that you've always shown in me. It is fit and right at a time such as this for husband and wife to be alone together. Let the doors be closed behind us. Tonight, I shall be to you not a general or a king, but a husband and a man.
Come, Agamemnon, put off these warlike clothes. You have no need of armor or weapons here. In Argos, there is nothing but admiration for you and what you accomplished. You took into your hands the great two-headed axe of justice and cut down Troy with it. Cut her down as if she were no more than a rotten tree.
Oh, I could tell you a tale of how it was for us. The misery, the heartache, the privations we endured under the shadow of their walls, lying comfortless on the unyielding ground, always short of sleep, always hungry, and how from Troy's flat, unharvested fields, the sky sucked up its persistent drizzle, its sodden dew, its vegetative damp, so that lice lived in our hair. Our clothes crawled with vermin, and there were months on end when we were never dry. In the winter, let me tell you, the cold was so intense that the seabirds froze in the hollow air. And in the dry midsummer's heat, even the ocean did not move. There was no wind. Nothing grew, except, or so it seemed to us, the distance between ourselves and our deliverance, earth and home, which grew daily like a lengthening shadow. These hard conditions and the solemn climate put many of us into strange diseases. Pestilence and fever took the strong, while the weak died of hunger or their own fear. In reward for our perseverance and struggle, we asked only a calm sea, a tranquil voyage to accompany the lag end of our labors. But it was not to be. Some chaos, or some violence deep-rooted in the order of things, rose up from the sea to meet us. We were 3 days out by sail from the island of Tenedos. The weather upon our departure had seemed to promise fair. The sea was calm, and below the prow as we sailed were dolphins in the water, wet-backed, glistening as they reared above the surface. Then, towards the evening, a fresh wind got up suddenly out of the east. The movement of the air over the decks became charged with violence. As we worked to lower the sails, the ropes burned our hands, moaning with a sound like the howling of dogs. Next, without warning, the wind swung hard to the north, while the sea roared its anger at us out of the darkness, faster than we could prepare to meet it. 2 men were swept off the hatches and lost as the storm cast its main force against us. For an hour or more, we struggled to hold our course. Then, striking our remaining canvas, we thought it best to let the helm go and to allow the ship to drive with the tide wherever it would please the highest gods to direct it. For a day and a night, we lived each moment in expectation of immediate death. Yet, by our bowing to the storm's ferocity, we ensured, it seems, our own survival. of the fleet which set sail from Troy. All the ships, except ours, have been scattered or wrecked. My brother Menelaus, on whose behalf I made these wars, is dead. So too is Helen, the wife he loved, but could not keep. I weep when I think how many thousands have suffered, how much they have endured, and how grievously because of that woman's worthless beauty.
Do not blame Helen. She did no murder when Troy was taken. Do you feel no disgust, Agamemnon, at your share of what has been done? Helen, if she is dead, was my beloved sister. I knew her better than any man can ever know a woman. She was none of the things you say. Her free nature bridled at the tyranny of the House of Atreus. She fled to Troy, finding there an emancipation which your blood-stained family could not offer. Troy, until you destroyed it, was a city unawed by ancient gods, unfettered by tribal ritual. Helen soared above you like an eagle. You have brought her down as the huntsman does, by cunning and by violence, making her name the word of war for the quarrel you sought with one another.
I know that yours is a proud race, proud of bearing a long memory. But we will discuss these affairs no further, Clytemnestra. Every man and woman who lives has some cause or other for self-reproach. I am a king. My life and private feelings I surrendered when I accepted the crown. I was required to show my strength. Since the past cannot be changed, let it be forgotten and forgiven.
Sometimes I think it is better not to forgive. I think it is a fault in us that we forgive ourselves so easily and so often. Thus we break faith with the dead, forgetting the agony by which they died. You call yourself a strong man, but a strong man, Agamemnon, does not live as you have lived. It is easy to shed blood, to be mastered by rage or lust, to hate without restraint. It is the strong man, Agamemnon, who refrains from killing. The strong man who refuses to perform the ancient ceremonies of blood which you say that the gods decree, but which we who live upon the earth devise for ourselves out of our own bloodlust and superstition. Every good thing I ever felt you have corrupted and turned to hate. Better that I and my sister had never set eyes on you or your brother. You have destroyed both of us. Worse, Agamemnon, you have made me as you are. Evil.
Woman! What are you doing? Help me! Somebody! Help me!
The only help we grant you, Agamemnon, is a quick death, a clean death.
Be a man, Agamemnon. Die like a man.
Wake, sir. You have been asleep for a long time. You must eat, sir.
Who are you?
Sir, I am the king's physician.
What's your name?
Sir, my name is Nikita. volcano. Sir, you must drink.
What city or what country is this?
Sir, this is Sparta. This is your own country.
If this is Sparta, as you say it is, as it seems to be, why have I no memory of how I came to be?
For 9 days, you have been lying in a state of stupor, possessing neither appetite nor thirst, nor the power to speak, while the extremities of your body remained as cold to the touch as the sea we plucked you from. As we watched over you, observing the passage of your illness, it appeared often that you despaired of yourself. But, sir, your constitution is strong. Your will to live, it seems, as tight as a clenched fist.
Well, my wife, she sailed with me aboard the ship which was wrecked. I beg you to tell me what's become of her.
Sir, other than yourself, it appears there are no survivors.
None?
None, sir.
Are you saying that I'm the only one who came out of the sea alive?
Sir, it has been 10 days since the vessel went down. If any others had survived, by now we would have found them. I was still a young man when the fleet set sail for Troy. But my father told me the story of how your wife was stolen from you by a foreign power, and how, to recover her, you and your brother Agamemnon made war upon Priam.
Helen, whom you say was stolen, went away of her own free will. My wife. I barely knew her. On the night we took the city, one of my men caught her by the hair as she ran from him among the ruins. I knew what was in his mind. I broke his skull with my fist, as I promised to do to any man who laid violent hands upon her. Helen stared at me, thinking, I suppose, that I was going to kill her. I said to her then, "Do not be frightened of me. What you did, or what you may have done, does not concern me. You're a woman, and women are weak. I am your husband. I have come to take you home." At this she screamed and tried to push me away. I threw her over my shoulder and carried her like luggage to the ship. And now it seems she is dead. A gannet or an oyster catcher might find her, but I, Menelaus, her husband, who loved her, can never hope to see her again. Every day of my life I have made sacrifices to propitiate the gods, but they have given me nothing.
Sir, there is more news. It grieves me to report it, but you are the king, and it should not be kept from you.
Say plainly what you have to say.
Agamemnon, your brother, is dead. His life was not lost at sea in the storm. His ship reached Argos in safety, but within an hour of his return, he was murdered in his own bed by Clytemnestra, his wife, who cut open his skull with a sacrificial axe.
Why? My brother raised her up and honored her. What reason did she have for killing him?
Sir, she has made her reasons for it well known, declaring that when he put to death at Aulis his firstborn daughter, Agamemnon committed a crime against nature and the gods.
What are these gods? Those who see them use them for their own ends. The gods tell them what they want to hear or what they dread.
Now, my brother was a harsh man, but the times required a nature stern and unyielding. What of Clytemnestra? Do her own people not condemn her for what she's done?
What her people say of her in private, or what they think, I do not know. But for 10 years, she has been custodian of the state in Argos, and she has exercised her own authority as ruthlessly as any man. Orestes and Electra, her children, she has banished from Argos. They have been sentenced to wander the earth as outlaws during their mother's lifetime, or to be killed if they attempt to return. But it is rumored that Orestes has already taken the customary oath of revenge.
Where is he now?
In hiding with his sister.
Where?
Sir, no one knows.
Order will be restored. Clytemnestra and any accomplices she may have had must be arrested and brought to trial. If Orestes or his sister Electra are allowed to take revenge upon their mother for their father's assassination, Agamemnon's legacy to Argos, and these islands collapses into anarchy. I shall be brutal in punishing malefactors. The law is not respected or obeyed, except through fear. As for me, Nicanor, I am no more now than a dead man.
No. You have life and breath. And while life and breath remain, sir, there is always hope.
Be silent. Have you lost a wife? Or known a brother destroyed? It maddens me to hear you speak these banal words of comfort. If you have not suffered, Nicanor, I have the power to make you suffer. Then you will understand that the life you cherish is violent and capricious.
Do to me, sir, whatever may please you. You are my king. My life and liberty are at your disposal. Yet still I make bold to say that the gods have preserved you, and in doing so they have shown that they love you.
Helen being dead, the gods are no more to me than a figure of speech.
Here, put on this robe. It is humiliating for a woman of your age and condition to stand in the slave market at Ephesus, covered only in the garment of poverty which the state provides.
I thank you.
What is your name?
My name is Helen.
Do you understand that from this moment on, according to the laws and statutes of the city of Ephesus, I am absolute master of you and have the right either to take your life or to set you free?
Kill me if it is your wish. I would prefer to be dead. Although in this city I am of no account, a bondwoman to be bought and sold as it pleases you or others, yet in my own country I was born the daughter of a king. Now, because you find me friendless and destitute, lacking wealth or strength, you put me to work as a slave, to scrub your floors or draw your water, or else to lie in your bed as your concubine. Only under these savage conditions will the laws of the city of Ephesus permit me to live.
We know, because we see everywhere the evidence of it, that in this life the innocent suffer for no reason. They are destroyed randomly, without cause or purpose. Yet when we ourselves are afflicted with pain, we howl our outrage to heaven and the gods.
I was taken out of the sea by pirates. At first, I was not harmed. Later, I was violated repeatedly. When I tried to resist, believing wrongly that I could shame my assailant by what I said to him, he took a knife and cut 3 trenches in my face, then rubbed sand into the wounds so that they would not heal cleanly. He did this, he said, to be sure that no other man would desire me as he had desired me.
It is hard for you, I know. But had you been old or ugly, These men would not in the first place have spared your life. I am a weaver. My name is Parmenion. You will help me prepare the cloth. There is plenty to do. I shall stand at the loom. But you are not used to standing. Sit, therefore, if you wish to sit.
I am a slave. I may not sit unless my master sits.
Do then as you think best. If, as you say, you are a king's daughter, then even as a child you will have had slaves to command. Did you weep then for their misery, as you weep now for your own?
Why must I work at your loom?
You will be happier if you work.
How if I am not?
Then say that you do it to repay me for the food and shelter which I provide.
I do not ask you to provide it.
No, nor did you ask to be born. God has chosen to bring you here. It is God who puts you to work.
I was wrecked in a storm. God did not make the storm.
You are wrong. God has made everything. If I had not done what I have done, who else would have protected you? You become my property, yet I ask nothing from you except the labor of your hands at my loom. In return, I give you shelter and nourishment. If, finding my company intolerable, you should seek to leave my house, be assured that I will not lock my doors against your escape, nor come searching to find you. I will ask no restitution of you or of the law, and however you treat me, I shall exact no penalty. I am not without wisdom, and know that one human creature cannot be master over the soul and body of another, except in law. Above all, be certain of this, that I have no design or dream of violating your body.
I cannot do this.
You can do it. See? You have a pair of eyes and a pair of hands. Therefore, you can do it.
I cannot.
Here. Persevere.
Why? I am tired. I am near the end of my strength.
You shout at me because you are spoiled and angry. Be angry with God. He created you. He has walked at your side all your life. But of course, you have always ignored him.
You are wrong. God does not walk at my side because God does not exist.
You are ungracious and obstinate.
I have made you angry.
My anger comes from God, not you.
I shouted at you.
Yes, you have no manners.
I was wrong to shout.
Is that so?
Forgive me.
It is of no importance.
It is important to me.
Very well.
You are an educated man. How have you come to be living as a maker of cloth?
A long time ago, I was a teacher. I was praised for the purity of my life, the agility of my intellect, and the depth of my perception. This pleased me very much, because I was a young man, not yet 20 years of age. Then one of my pupils, a pretty girl who came from a good family, was discovered to be with child. Her parents, as is common in such circumstances, were filled with rage and demanded to be told the name of the man who had corrupted their daughter. At length, after much argument, the girl swore upon her honor that I was the father. At once I was turned out of my school. My former pupils condemned me, and my former neighbors refused to let me live among them. So I went into the desert, and I made a home there. When the child was born, it was given to me as a punishment to graze and rear as best I could. I found it no punishment, and grew to love the child. Finally, troubled in spirit and burdened by guilt, the girl confessed. The true father of her child was a handsome young man from a nearby village. At once the parents sought me out. They begged my forgiveness, which I gave willingly. They also required me to return the child. I did this too.
You gave back the child?
It was not mine to keep.
But you made no complaint?
None.
For 3 years they had forced you to live as an outcast.
The mother was frightened.
Well, she only had herself to blame.
That is true. But there was no other way in which I could be of service to her. I was a clever young man, but I had nothing to teach. I was no use to her, except as the father of her child.
Did you feel no anger at what she had compelled you to suffer?
What I felt, and what I did, I did. I taught, but I had not lived. Now I have lived, and I have no desire to teach.
I betrayed my husband. The fault was not in him, the fault was in me. I chose to go with my lover to the city of Troy. Troy was a great city, greatest on earth, strong, far-sighted, wise. But Troy has been destroyed. On the night that the city fell, I saw my husband kill with his own bare hands any man who insulted me or struck me. I knew that my husband loved me. Yet the more he desired me, the colder I became. Something in us, to which you give the name God, strives to ruin us. It is like a demon, and seems often to possess a force stronger than our own strength. It haunts us with dreams beyond our scope to fulfill them, and engenders in us lusts and longings which, if we enact them, turn our spirits to vain or evil ends. We call this unquietness of soul by many names, saying, in our delusion, that a God is walking beside us, as if we are governed in our designs by the tyranny of heaven as the tide is by the sway of the moon. I say that what divides us against ourselves, what speaks to us in our visions and dreams, is only our own mortal nature. We are alone upon the earth, and for everything that we do, we bear the responsibility alone.
You were pulled from the sea, but your husband is dead?
Yes. Drowned. What can I do?
Do for a time whatever work you are given to do. Rejoice and give thanks that you are alive.
I cannot.
The cruelest lesson that life has to teach us is this. Everything which is given may be taken away. Your home, your livelihood, your loved ones, your health, your sight, your competence to perform basic bodily functions. But one thing you may preserve, your peace of mind. It cannot be destroyed except from within.
It can. The world can destroy it.
No. Heaven and hell are within your own mind.
Orestes and Electra, you are Clytemnestra's natural children, the children of her body, yet you took your mother's life with impunity, stabbing her to death in her own home and at her own hearth. For all this, you have been tried and condemned by the elders and the people of Argos and brought here to me in Sparta for my judgment. You are both notorious criminals and have deserved the sentence which the court has rightly passed upon you, namely, to be put to death by public stoning. If you have anything to say in your own defense, you may speak it now.
I, Orestes of Argos, make no complaint. I did the thing for which I am condemned. I'm heir to the throne of Argos, yet at my father's death, I was banished from sight, denied my birthright and my inheritance, and denounced without truth as illegitimate. My mother had killed my father's bondwomen and put her own favorites into their places. She sat upon the throne of Argos, laughing at our misfortunes. It fell to me to reclaim what was legally my own and to avenge the murder of the father I honored and loved.
Were there not laws in Argos which might have restored you to your rank and position and condemned your mother for the crimes she had committed?
The laws of Argos were no match for my mother's strength and cunning. Well, that is why Electra and I returned in secret, disguising ourselves as travelers from the city of Phocis. And we have prepared well for what we had to do, putting it abroad that we have both died violently in exile.
Agamemnon was your brother, Menelaus. You have the power by blood either to commute the sentence or dissolve it. Why will you not do it? Orestes avenged your own flesh. Has he not suffered enough? Have you no feeling for him and no pity?
Electra, you misunderstand me. I do not hate you or your brother. You killed to avenge the father you loved. But I cannot and I will not change the law. Hatred is stronger than love, stronger than hope. Therefore, the law must be stronger than either. But if your brother has anything to say which will do him good, then let him say it for himself.
No one knew us. We passed unrecognized through the gatehouse. We were taken into the kitchen for food. The servants there did not recognize me, but the dogs did. Well, they knew me at once, licking my hands and face. My mother came in complaining about the noise. She looked as if she'd been asleep, dozing before dinner. At first, she did not recognize me. Then, In her eyes, I could see that she knew me. At once, the color drained from her cheeks. She understood that for all her power, she was no more than a moment away from violent death. I remember. I struck only a single blow, but it severed her throat. The wound bled as if she had 100 years of life still inside her. I had not imagined that she would be so strong, that she would struggle, I mean, with such ferocity. Well, see. Here, she bit my hand where it held the knife. I have the imprint still of her teeth upon my palm. I am glad that I have it. It is a mark I shall never lose, like the mark upon my mind. I know that I must suffer until my life is over. The past is fixed. I cannot change it. The gods live forever, but even they cannot recover the time or the moment. When it was finished, I went out into the sunlight to look for water. I wanted to scour every trace of the blood from off my skin. I saw that in the garden, which she had loved and planted with her own hands, the flowers still bloomed, the herbs grew neatly in rows. I could smell in the air the smell of herbs and of the earth. I remembered things which I had long forgotten, things in her, which had compelled my soul to love and honor her when I was a boy.
Let me bathe your head, then I shall sing to you, then you will sleep. For a short time my song will bring peace to your mind.
No, Electra. The body can be healed, but once the mind's balance is gone, it's gone irrecoverably.
Alone, on the road, something visible, but not real, dogs my footsteps, stopping when I stop, resting when I rest. I would have my mind as empty as a broken jug, but still the thoughts come. The skin on the innermost parts of my body is corrupted with sores. When I am dressed, my limbs are covered with a rash as dark as dried blood. I have tried to be strong, but I'm not strong enough.
You were strong enough for Orestes to lay violent hands upon your own mother. Do not tell me now that you're weak. Do not plead to me that you suffer. Pray for death when your sufferings will end.
You did not condemn Helen, your wife, when the gods delivered her into your hands at Troy. You let her go free, but the gods have destroyed her. You are the same stock as my father, but how different in the mind you bear. I am a woman afflicted by my sex with physical weakness, yet when my mother struck down my father for nothing more than her own gain, I helped my brother to destroy her. When he hesitated to do what was required, I urged him on and would not permit him to rest until my mother's crimes were punished. Understand that I acted as I did because I heard inside my head the voice of God. It is not vicious to hate evil and injustice, and it is not virtuous to show mercy to the evildoer. What we did had to be done. We made ourselves unclean by murder to cleanse the nation we love. We are the nation. Our right comes linearly. You cannot throw it down. We are above the laws of men, but under divine law. You are a king. If you do not uphold justice, who else will do it?
More words from you, Electra. You talk of justice, but justice is an abstraction. Justice does not exist because the gods do not judge us. All of us, we judge ourselves. Your certainty tells me only this, that no man has ever touched you. If you had spent your days as I have spent mine, then you would know what courage is, what hardship means. As for feeling, and as for pity, I have none. And I ask for none. For 2 interminable years, I have lived my life desiring only that it should end. I eat and drink no more than is needful for me to sustain nature. A jug of water and a loaf of black bread, which my servant Nicanor brings to me each evening an hour after sundown. I have tried to starve the sorrow out of myself. But this perplexity endures. I suffer. So must you. You killed, therefore you must die.
Nicanor, take these prisoners away. It is the order of this court that the sentence of death be carried out before sunset tomorrow. In the meantime, as is customary for capital offenders, let them be chained to the wall of the palace gate, whereby day or night they may suffer the disapprobation of those who pass by.
Across the years, a breeze as light as dandelion seeds brings the smell of pines and cedars to my homesick senses. I remember winter, with its black frost, its deep, impassable snows, and the infinite blazing skies of the summer's drought. I remember, until I weep, the sun, high at midday, hammering down upon the dry riverbed until the stones crack. The cicada, hidden in rough yellow grass, almost silent. In the blue distance, as insubstantial as smoke, a herd of goats seen dimly, the colour of rust, flowing over the hillside as the goat herd calls to them. Then out of shimmering sky, heavy rain washes the air clean as darkness falls. These memories I shall carry always in my heart. Of Sparta, where I was born, and where for 2 years I have longed and prayed to return.
Stranger, there is water. The sun is rising and we are tired and thirsty.
Who has confined you here? In chains like animals under the open sky.
The ruler of this place who has condemned us to death.
You are little more than children. How have you deserved to die?
We murdered our own mother.
Then you have broken primal law.
Yes, but she sinned first in murdering our father.
What was your mother's name?
Clytemnestra of Argos.
I know the story. Who does not? Your sister's name was Iphigenia. You are Electra. This man who lies at your feet is your brother, Orestes.
Orestes is mad. His wits are gone. Death will be a blessed release for him.
And for you, Electra?
I'm not afraid.
Do you want to die?
The world is ugly and cruel. We think that in it we are free to make choices of our own, but those choices are made for us by what our parents did. The evil they inflicted upon one another, the good they could not bring themselves to do.
I think you would prefer to live.
I am young. I have known nothing. I swore that I would not let a man touch my body until my mother lay dead and my brother was crowned king. I hoped then that Argos might be again as it once was. Before the war, before the slaughter, before our sister died at Aulis, before our mother polluted her bridal bed with our father's blood. But now, these things I hoped and prayed for can never be fulfilled. Today at sunset we must both die.
Immortal sister, and it is needful for us to die. Death is the sky above us, the earth below our feet.
Is this Orestes, Agamemnon's son?
Yes. For the space of one more day's daylight.
If you were made free now, Electra, how would you use your freedom?
I would punish my enemies and destroy all those who assisted my mother.
You are full of hatred, Electra.
You are right. I am full of hatred, but my mother put it there. She and her sister Helen, in whom it began.
Who are you? Why do you converse with these prisoners?
They asked me for water, so I gave them water.
You should not have done.
I have done no harm.
Stand aside.
I am not your subject.
Why do you wear a veil?
I serve the god.
What is your name?
I have no name. I have come out of charity from my master, Parmenion of Ephesus. The affliction of your master, the king, was known to Parmenion. I am here to help him and to bring him, if I can, out of darkness into light.
Why does Parmenion of Ephesus not come himself to help the king of Sparta?
Parmenion is dead. I have come in his place.
Parmenion of Ephesus led an austere and holy life, for which the gods loved him and blessed him with their gifts of healing. You are not, and could not be, as he was.
In myself I am nothing. But when Parmenion lay dying, he charged me then to remain in his place and to do the work which the gods brought. 2 years ago, I was a refugee from a foreign war, friendless and destitute, in a country I did not know. Parmenion bought me the 30 talents in the slave market at Ephesus. In this way, he protected me from those who would certainly have broken both my spirit and body. Later, I learned that what he did for me, he had done out of his charity for many others. He earned a frugal living as a maker of cloth, yet he had besides some power or skill beyond what can be studied or acquired. Yet he did it not for his own satisfaction, but because he believed, I think, that the gods demanded it of him. He was, for all his kindness, severe in his speech and strict in his instruction. In my former life, I had lived, as many do, in comfort and ease, but in his house, I was permitted no luxury or indulgence. I slept, as he did, on a goatskin mat and ate only once a day. I often felt, but did not say, that only a man deficient in some warmth or quickness of feeling could do as much good as Parmenion did. Yet although I feared the temper of his mind, I grew to respect him and to love him.
Madam, you shame me. Stay and do for us whatever lies in your power. Each day at sunrise and sunset, the king goes up to the temple on the hill to pray for his dead wife. Walk with me now, and you will observe him.
Between stone and sky, between heaven and the eye, the sublunary world. But grief within the skull more real than my weariness. I am the hearth when the fire is out. I am the stream run dry in the long summer drought. I fear the perturbation within my own soul. Once you leant upon my cheek and hung about my neck. The gods have no power to make me whole. When all about me spoke bitterly of you and made in my sullen hearing a litany of your misdeeds, I, whom you wronged, never spoke a word against you. No man is lucky in everything. at dusk, I turn my eye heavenward. As the moon rises, I see the owl fall on the mouse. Mastery is all. Better to be down where the mole digs than to seek contentment in this alien landscape. Did you ever take thought of the maiming you gave me by living and dying a stranger to me? I wait for a sign which is beyond your giving. The dead do not come back to life. The time is irrecoverable. Death has no fault or flaw. Death keeps its color pure. Death is a stone with a shiny surface, hard and heavy and chaste. I long for the song bringing Jack to Jill. I am a broken child upon a broken hill. I wake in the night, but there is no one there. What infection breeds near my heart? What demons compel me out of sleep and into memory? What name, or tell me, should I give to this knowledge of loss?
For more than 2 years he has lived in this condition. His sight is poor, his hearing hard, and his body weakened by continual austerity. Yet no one doubts he is the king.
Who's there?
One who wishes you long life.
I curse you for saying so.
Sir, I beg mercy for the two condemned prisoners who are to be put to death.
They are condemned by law.
You have the power to omit the penalty.
I will not do so. Let them find their acquittal together in the earth, where there can be no weariness, no joy, no pain, only senselessness.
Why do you speak so harshly?
Why? My back aches. I can't piss without it hurting. I'm maddened by the flies and the heat. Yet for 20 years I dreamt of returning. I dreamt of looking up into the hills each morning and thinking, I have come home at last. I shall never leave except as a corpse. Here, once, I made plans for my life. You know what I wanted? Sparta at peace, her borders secure, trade routes open. I was going to have a son who'd rule in my place when I was gone. Now my life is almost over, so I do what any man must do until the breath leaves his body. I work. I give justice impartially.
I do not talk of justice. I say only this, that there has been blood enough to fill an ocean.
Who are you to censure me?
Like you, I was at Troy. And remember well the night that the city fell to Agamemnon's army. It was cool and bright with a full moon. There had been hour on hour of eating and drinking. Suddenly, our frivolity was broken by the clamor of voices raised in fear, the noise of weapons clattering on stone. Someone cried out, "Fire, fire, we're under attack!" I remember how in terror at hearing the general alarm I fled from my bed. I had nothing to put on except a thin white robe and a veil to cover my face. For several hard-fought hours, the streets and the public places ran black with blood. Then, at dawn, once the survivors had been rounded up, Agamemnon himself arrived to speak to them. He was heavily guarded and stood on the ruins of a wall near the Temple of Athene. He shouted, "Oh, you weep now, people of Troy, you cry to heaven, saying that justice and the gods do not exist. The opposite is true. That is why I am not minded to show mercy to any of you. I note you made no complaint against fortune or fate when Troy was rich and strong. You ate, drank, and made love with impunity, while we died daily of hunger or our wounds. the 10 years you laughed at our pain. As you die, let those memories sustain you. Then the slaughter began. Have you ever heard the sound which the ewe makes in the sheepfold when she is separated from her lambs?
I remember. It's hard for me to think what I did then. Agamemnon, my brother, has paid with his life for that night's work. Hey, you say you were there. Tell me who you are.
Look at me. Do you still not know who I am? Do you still not know me? You loved me and were once my lord.
Why do you call me lord?
Because it is my right by worldly law and by the laws of heaven to do it.
I don't understand.
As you lost your wife, so I lost my husband.
Who are you?
When the city had been destroyed, I was granted this remission to go freely as I had once come. A great storm rose up against me, and in it, a second life, a second husband were lost to me in a single night.
Take off your veil. Let me see your face.
My lord, my name is Helen. My lord, the one half of my life, do not doubt me. I am your wife, and my name is Helen, and you are the shipwrecked man who for so long I have mourned in my heart, and who I see now is not dead but alive.
Oh, you gods. Oh, you just... And merciful gods, I never thought to hear your voice again, or hold you in my arms.
I am like Hesperus, the star of the evening, who brings home at nightfall the lamb to the ewe, the child to the mother, the wanton to her lover's bed.
You, Helen, let all the rest be forgotten.
My beauty has been an affliction to me. My own nature, which took delight in physical love, was also like an illness or a corruption of the blood. If I had not broken my vow of marriage, Iphigenia would not have died at Aulis. My sister would not have hated your brother for killing her. When a woman hates a man, their children are cursed. Their lives unfold crookedly. The spirit of their parents' deep-rooted antipathy runs in the blood beyond cause or sense. Release them, Menelaus. Restore Orestes to the throne of Argos. Let all our sorrows end here.
I will gladly do as you desire me. Yet I think that the boy Orestes is not fit to rule.
He will recover.
That is not possible.
Three months after Parmenion, my master died, a boy, no more than 5 years old, was brought to me for help. The child had succumbed to a fever common in the summer. Although I protested that I had not Parmenion's power nor any skill of my own to assist them, his parents would not be refused. I sat all night long at the child's side, praying that his sickness would leave him. I used the words which Parmenion had taught me. when morning came. The boy's fever had gone. If you ask me why the god chooses to work through me or within me, I do not know the answer. I only know that it pleases the god to do these things. Acknowledge him, Menelaus. He is a great god.
By what name shall I know him?
My name is Hermes. I speak the words of the gods and have walked at your side a long time.
Tell me who or what you are.
Zeus was my father. My mother was a goddess. Her name was Maia. I was born in fire. If you could see me as I truly am, the sight would burn your eyes. Accordingly, I walk disguised among the haunts of men. Often in the summer's barren heat, I have assumed the lineaments of age and walked bareheaded in the noonday glare, desiring water in the August drought, seeking contentment under the elder tree, eking out the bald year with the dry red crust. At night, I bathe my eyes. I wash away the dust and debris of this death-bound world. At dawn, I watch the fading constellations. I am a pilgrim. I shall always strive to know the best and worst of mortal natures. I live among you, though you do not know me. I am your shadow. You may partly glimpse me beyond the span of eyesight in the dusk, or in the violence of a winter storm, confront my face and comprehend my nature. My voice is heard where water bursts from rock in mountain cataracts. I am found wherever fire burns, wherever love makes its unreasoning compact, wherever dreams release the weaved up sorrows of the soul. These are my mysteries. They will always be far from the reach of human understanding. Acknowledge them for what they are. Acknowledge me.
You have given me much, and I am grateful for it. I never thought to end my days with my wife at my side, in Sparta, where my heart has always been. But I'm an old man now. My body is losing its strength. I tire easily. My sight is no longer clear. And soon, whatever remains of me will go forever into an eternal silence. An eternal darkness. Let us not pretend that we live more than once, or are young and strong for more than a short time.
You speak only according to what you know, or have taught yourself to believe. I come to show that sometimes the gods give back what is taken. Sometimes they bless, as well as punish. Sometimes the miraculous happens, and the probable does not. Accept what comes to pass. Believe. Have faith.
Come to me and set me free from sour-hearted melancholy. What my soul desires to be, O Zeus, immortal, make of me.
Helen lived many more years, dying in old age of sound mind, at peace. Orestes, ruled in his father's place in Argos, sensibly and well. But the age of glory was over for Agamemnon's race. Agamemnon had sold everything to finance his war with Troy, and when Clytemnestra murdered him, it was soon discovered that there was nothing in Argos left to sell. Within 100 years, the cities had declined to villages, and the islands were ripe for another invasion from the north. The legend of the old world was over. History had begun. But since people do not change, what they do also remains the same. The blood, the hatred, the quarreling, the ambition, and the pursuit of war. If you ask me why we tell these tales of long ago, I answer that legends are like dreams. They tell us what we need to know.
In the final part of Troy by Andrew Rissick, Achilles was played by Toby Stevens, Augustus by James Hayes, Agamemnon by Oliver Cotton, and Anacreon by Ian Hogg. Emma Fielding was Andromache, Cassandra Sperry, Electra, Deborah Findlay, Hecabe, Michael Maloney, Hector, Geraldine Somerville, Helen, and Paul Schofield, Hermes, with Lindsay Duncan as Clytemnestra, James Lawrenson as Menelaus, Geoffrey Whitehead as Nicanor, Abigail Doherty as Oenone, Jean-Marc Perret as Orestes, and Michael Sheen as Paris. Saeed Jaffrey played Parmenion, David Harewood Patroclus, Julian Glover Priam, and Eleanor Bron Thetis. The singer was Mia Soteriou, and the producer was Jeremy Mortimer.